So a hot topic has been wellness in the workplace. We wanted to discuss what that means at Keens and Moment Company. So Fee and myself are going to chat through kind of what we've done at Keens. Keens has always had a vision of trying to give people a better lifestyle, which is a huge task. But the idea has very much been, how do we improve people who are working with us, whether that's our clients, whether that's our team members, anyone who's involved, how do we give them a better lifestyle and make work part of the life rather than your whole life? So Fee and I met in my first job in the industry, and Fee actually brought me over to the US. Fee has been a board member of Keens from the early days and is now taking a more active role as part of the senior leadership of Keens, as well as running her own company Moment. So I'll let Fee introduce herself.
Thanks, Dan. I'm Fiona, for those of you that don't know me. I was 22 years almost in the ad tech industry, and I've known you, Dan, for at least half of that, if not more. I was working in Australia, so my career took me all over the world, which I'm very grateful for and sounds very glamorous, but actually is a big part of what I do now today as well. My story of working predominantly with startups, predominantly in the ad tech industry and global. But yeah, I met you as you were happened to be in Melbourne, where your brother, I believe, was living at the time, and that's where I was working also. And you happened to walk past my office as I was putting together an org chart to start a new business in Los Angeles. And I yelled on you and said, "Oi, do you fancy coming to work with me in LA?" Because you were still based in London at the time. And the rest, as they say, is history. And you haven't left since. So it was fortuitous timing that has led you to be in the States. But I spent a lot of time on the road. I spent a lot of time moving in my career. And what that ultimately led to in 2016 was complete physical and mental exhaustion. And that was just not being able to understand what was happening to me. At that time, I also did not have the ability to say no. It's not something that we're very good at in the ad tech world. It's not something we're very good at as startup members of new businesses in this industry. And so I had no personal boundaries, and I just kept moving country every couple of years and taking on more and more responsibility. And that ultimately led me to experience burnout. And that's why I do what I do now every day, which is share the benefits of mindfulness, of breath work, of just taking a moment of the power of our own minds and how we can really reset ourselves and learn these skills. You know, we're not born with these things. Well, we are actually, we just forget them. So it's a case of re-educating ourselves on the simple things in life and understanding that we cannot run at full pelt and expect to be productive human beings, both in work and outside, if we don't look after ourselves. So that's really what we do at Moment Company. But that's why we have some good conversations around what well-being means to you and why it's important for you to want to improve people's lifestyle that both work for you and for your clients. And that's something that we've had a lot of conversations around. What is kind of well-being mean for you, and why is it important at Keens?
So what you just said about your burning out in 2016 and your experiences is kind of why, you know, I asked you to be part of Keens, and especially more recently in a more active role. It's not just the 20 plus years of ad tech experience and understanding the industry and the nuances and being on panels and a very decorated resume, but it's also from the understanding of the mental health side of things and the real deep understanding there. We obviously talk very, very regularly, and you work a lot with people in the team. And some of the conversations are breathwork conversations. They're not the typical, how do you talk to this client? You know, can we upsell them? Those aren't the typical conversations. The conversations that are having are like, breathwork. What are you doing outside of work? What are you doing to take that moment by yourself? And then in those conversations, you can see the impact on the team. And it comes back to the question around what does it mean for Keens? We're all different. my experiences are going to be different to your experiences. And so it's understanding each person is going to be different, have a different drive, have different hurdles and see things differently.
It means we have different stress triggers as well. Things that stress me out are not going to be the same things that stress you out, and how we respond and react to that is going to be different. So one of the most important things to ask sometimes is just, how are you right now? How are you today? And you don't necessarily have to your point, be talking about a specific process, a specific task, or an element of your role. It's like, how do you show up today? What might be the reasons why you might be a little bit lower today than you were yesterday, or things might feel like they're impacting you to a greater extent when they weren't last week? It's because we all are the same person when we're sitting with our families or our partners or whatever we have outside of our work. Mm-hmm. And you can't just look at what the person does when they walk up into the workplace. You have to approach things from that work-life perspective, because you cannot, even more so today than ever, you can't separate home and work anymore. We are all working from home after all. So it's important to ask the questions around not just how's your job going, but how are you today as well.
What you just touched on when we talk about the work-life balance, especially working from home. At Keens, we kind of joke that we've been a working from home company before it was fashionable to do so. Mm-hmm. Right? Pre-COVID, we were already working from home. And there's pros and cons. From a business point of view, great, we don't have an office space. But to build that water cooler type conversations, the rapport that you get is much harder. You have to do a lot more virtual with things like Zoom and more conversations via Slack and that type of stuff to make sure things are flowing. Some things are going to be natural and some things aren't going to be. And what does working from home mean? Does it actually mean working from home? If you are, you know, single, living in a one-bedroom apartment, working from home means something very different to someone with three kids at home. That means something very different to someone who lives in a big house that has separate spaces. What other human interaction are you having? We've tried many things. We've tried coffee hours on Zoom where for 2 hours, people can join and chat and just enjoy each other's company, kind of get that water cooler thing. We do morning meetings with the whole team. But as soon as that call's done every morning, how do we create an environment where people either can meet each other if they're in similar locations, co-working environments if they want that, or just a break? How do we create that and do it in a way that makes people feel like they're not going to be punished for not sitting at their desk from 9 to 5? They get that autonomy. They want to go work out at lunchtime. They want to go play some golf on Friday afternoon. Enjoy yourself. And so it's less on hours and more on how you get to improve your own lifestyle. I would rather have 30 hours, 20 hours of someone's time where they're dedicated and caring about what they're doing than 40 hours where someone's doing it staring at the clock.
There's so much to touch on what you just said there. Yes to all of the above. So there's a couple of interesting points there. There's definitely something in that appointment-based Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. Let's all just say that that really never existed in the online ad tech world anyway. Don't think I've ever worked Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. However, there's a difference between that competitive lateness and showing up from a I'm here to actually showing up. Those two things have got confused along the way. And I've been in so many situations, as I know you have as well, where the person that stays the latest is the one that's rewarded. I would always argue they're the ones that need the most support. Because there's no reason to be in the office till 10 o'clock every night unless you're overworked, poor decision making for somewhere along the line, you don't have the tools and training to do what you do. Or here's another thing, maybe you don't want to go home. Maybe there's a reason personally that you want to be in that a safer office environment. And to always assume that that person is the hardest worker is it's not doing anybody in the organization a service. And I know you've kind of felt that through your career as well.
I mean, you touched on it, but it comes from the top down. There's a division here. We've got both ends of the spectrum and both extremes. We've got some people who are like, don't praise hours, praise your lifestyle outside of work, which I agree. And then you've got people like the Elon Musk who are saying, I'm working 16 hours a day. That's why I'm the richest person on the planet. There's an element of what's your personality trait? What do you enjoy doing? What makes you happy? And how do you incorporate all of that? You may sit down with Elon Musk and he might be like, work is the only thing that makes me happy. And that's why I want to work 16 hours a day. And you have other people that are like, I just work because I want to go out and enjoy time on with my friends on the weekends. They're not wrong, but there's different things that we need to look at for different people. Personally, I enjoy what I do. I'm thinking about it all the time. And that doesn't mean I don't have other things outside that I really enjoy doing, as I do, but that's my personal choice. The first thing I think about is what productive hours look like. When we think about this 9 to 5, I was smiling when you were talking about it, because my first contract was 9 to 6. And if you left before 6 o'clock, you were seen as lazy. Mm-hmm. There was one person I worked with who left at 10 to 6 to catch their train. And every time I saw him leave, I'd look and I'd be like, this guy's lazy. Again, grad, straight out of college. And then I remember people coming in senior leadership roles at that company. And they were telling you, if you didn't stay till 7 o'clock, you really weren't working that hard. One person at the company would wait until her boss left. As soon as her boss left, within 5 minutes, closed laptop, walked out. We have about 3 to 4 productive hours a day, right? So I personally believe in optimizing your day, optimizing your job. So I tell everybody at Keens, it doesn't matter if you're accounts, but your client service, talking to our partners, you're in business development, you're in marketing, you're in performance. Everyone's job is to optimize your own job, which means, how do I make my job easier? What technologies, how do I make myself better at my own job? How can I focus those 3-4 hours a day on actually being productive?
Focus being the key word, right? I mean, we all remember, I just about remember what it was like being working at an office. Let's face it, 2 hours a day, people probably were on Facebook and sorting out their holidays and doing a bit of life admin, because it's just life admin, it's what we need to do. But focus is so key. Do you know that when we pick up our phones, it takes us 23 minutes to get back into the task that we were doing, and you don't even need to pick it up. Just having it visible on your desk is enough to distract you. So if we were all able just to work really, and this is what mindfulness is that I'm really passionate about. It's just about being 100% focused on the task at hand without distraction, without distraction, without judgment. Kind of Freudian, but works as well. Mm-hmm. And there's something really powerful in that. So if you're just working on something intently without distraction, you're going to be 100% more focused and productive than if you're trying to multitask. Multitasking does not work. It's just not possible to be really focused on the task at hand while you're also doing other things, which brings up for me another point when you were talking about people not leaving the office until they felt it was safe to do so, that kind of psychological safety of being, what's my least risky move here, and planning their exit accordingly, is that for some people, they got to go and pick up their kids, their carers. I worked for CNN and we did a survey back in 2018, and it turned out that nearly a quarter of people were responsible for caring for somebody else in their home, which outside of children aren't often given consideration. It's such a huge responsibility, both physically, emotionally, and financially, that is almost invisible. Also, 70% of disabilities are actually invisible as well. So somebody might be struggling with health issues, which they look perfectly normal, but they might have arthritis, or they might have something, digestive issues, or something that means that they actually have to be home for medication, or they just can't function for as long periods of time as perhaps somebody that doesn't have those disabilities, but they don't wear it on their sleeve, so you aren't aware of it. So there are many reasons why somebody might be leaving at a certain time, but it doesn't mean that that person that left the office at 5 o'clock isn't picking it back, the laptop back up again outside of hours, or that they were maybe in an hour before everybody else, mm-hmm. which is the other end of the spectrum. But rewarding showing up isn't enough. It needs to be based on outcomes, deliverables. And that's where good leadership and good boundary setting and communication really play their part. So what is expected of me? What does success in my role look like? And coming back to that statement around psychological safety, it's how willing is a person to ask their line manager, their boss, their leader, whoever it might be, what does success look like for me? How am I doing today? What is that open level of communication where people feel comfortable in asking those questions? Because that can remove a big part of the day-to-day stress of a workplace.
What you just touched on is one of the key things that we look at Keens. And I'm not going to sit here and say I'm perfect and we do things perfectly. Like, we're constantly evolving, constantly.
No one does, because we're all just trying. We're all humans. We get it wrong.
Exactly.
It's part of the learning, but it's knowing how to grow from that. That's most important.
Yes. I mean, I'm a big believer in boundaries and not rules. So boundaries personal and boundaries work. You as an individual should set some boundaries yourself that you feel comfortable with. Like, you just talked about lifestyle and families and not knowing what other people have. We're hardwired to look at hours as effort. In Australia, where you asked me to move to LA, I talked to Alistair Jensen, and he made a great point. And his point was, he believed if you worked late, it was on him, not on you. So if you've got too much work that you can't get it done during the day, it's not the typical poor time management. It was, what am I doing as a lead that means that they have to work this late? Now, I'm not saying at Keens we've never worked late. There's definitely days where we've had to get, you know, clients have asked for a report that we just have to work a little later on. But that flexibility is back and forth. If someone wants to take Friday afternoon off, Thursday off, no one asks, you can just take it off. We all know Black Friday is a huge sale day in the US. Everyone's going to take Thanksgiving off, but there's going to be something you're going to have to look at on Black Friday. That flexibility is both ways, but it's not like what I've seen with other companies where it's, I expect you to work on Black Friday. I expect you to work till 6 o'clock every day. I expect you to respond to emails at 8 p.m. if they come in on a Friday. It's the trust in that you know what you're doing. You own your project and you're going to optimize your own job.
Yeah, the way that we work has fundamentally changed in the last 3 years. That it has. And as you say, you were kind of ahead of that curve of not having a central office space. But it's going to be interesting to see how the next year unfolds in terms of working looks like. We've got some great lessons from COVID. We've got some things that we didn't get right. I actually just spoke to an agency this morning and they were saying they were looking about how they get people back in the office, and I guess able to create that sort of team environment again. And it can be things like social. So are there hours that you can allocate where people can do social things together? But they didn't want to just have their office to be the social gathering. It's like, how do we create that creative workspace again? So what you do and the boundaries that you set outside work are really important for your creativity and your productivity. And it's also important for that energy you bring in to others as well. So it's important that you do have something that invigorates you outside of the workplace. So sleeping 24/7 in your office, I would argue, makes you less productive, not more, and should not be celebrated. It would probably make you very dull. Where does your creativity come from when you're under that kind of pressure in that same environment? I would argue it's impossible to show up in a great way when you do that. So when this agency are looking about how do we take on board all of those things and make sure that people come into an office environment and are really engaged, one of the interesting things they mentioned was that, yes, they can invest in well-being, which I obviously strongly recommend, but also how can they support their employees around that lifestyle choice again? So giving them a few hours and investing in things that they can do for themselves, gym memberships, things outside of that. Curiosity, do you want to just go and try something new and do something fun? But also they were looking at how they can help support them with the cost of living increases about just getting to the office. Mm-hmm. So people got used to wearing our slippers, not having any commuting costs, gas costs or food costs outside of the home. How do we create an environment where people feel that they can be supported financially to come back into the office? Because I always assumed that the youngins are the ones that wanted to come back in. So grads, people straight out of uni, it's their maybe first or second job, because we create a lot of social connections, and important work happens when you create social connections in the workplace. And they would be the ones that were craving coming back to the office the most. Mm-hmm. But actually this agency's research have shown that it's the senior leaders that want to come back into the office, and the sort of grads and the startups can no longer afford the cost of coming into a workplace. And there's a lot of financial stress put under them for paying for their lunches, paying for their gas, paying for their commuter costs, which I hadn't really ever have I considered? So I guess I've got about a million questions wrapped up or observations wrapped up in that. But I know you're looking at ways in which you can help people find things to create some productivity, some interest outside of the office, because that is important for the kind of energy that you then bring to your role as well.
That's interesting. No, I mean, I could understand senior people wanting to get back to the office. Again, you talk about life stages, and that's an important side. Also, where do they live? Do they have alone time to be able to work? I'm not overly shocked that people want to go back to the office. I can see it from my side of things. When I've looked at who we work with, you know, how the team are interacting, some of the biggest things that we've worked on over the past few years have been just people's morale working from home. Mm-hmm. The fact that someone's walked from there, which their bed is, to here, where their desk is, and they've gone from here to the kitchen, to the bathroom and the back, and that's their day. They've not walked outside. There is something in that. And so it's encouraging people to take some of their own time, for sure. But it's interesting that more of the senior people want to be back in the office. And it could be about just team morale. When you're looking at it from a leadership point of view, what we've tried to do is, again, talking about that human interaction and how crucial that is making sure people have the ability of, if they want to work in a co-working space, facilitating that. How I look at most situations is, how do I remove the friction points for you? Or how do I help remove them? Or can I help remove them? Working from home, you're not getting enough human interaction. Well, will co-working help that? Maybe if you're in LA, as an example, you need a car. You're going to be paying for gas. You're going to have to be paying for food. How does that look? How can we remove frictions, but also do it in a way that gets you to that interaction with other people? And it's actually something you said once that really resonated. It was a different view for a different view. So the concept of
change your perspective.
Maybe that
you to look at something different. It doesn't have to be a whole new skill or something that feels quite overwhelming. You put movie on in the background because you know that that's for focus time. Mm-hmm. Like, I used to commute every day into London, which is about an hour and a half from here. And I love doing crosswords and Sudoku puzzles. And I found that if I looked out the window and then went back to my puzzle, I always saw the next thing when I got stuck. So when I got stuck, I literally just changed my perspective. I looked at something different. And when I returned to it, I was able to solve the problem. And as ridiculous as that sounds in the day to day, that literally is all it can kind of take. So I remind myself sometimes, just go and look outside the window. And then come back and sit down. And just that, you almost kind of circuit break your mind from the challenge, the problem that you're in. By just kind of making that shift, you literally flick a switch. It's enough to kind of reset the brain, control, alt, delete, come back and sit down to whatever it is that you're doing. And that's really what we promote at Moments. And what we promote is that it just takes like 30 to 60 seconds of just changing your mindset, whether that's physically moving, taking a deep breath, looking out the window, putting on music. I love to just put out on music, blast something, and it totally gets you in a different space because it's energy. So if you listen to something uplifting, it's going to uplift your mood. You can't help it. That's how your body reacts, because we have 60,000 thoughts a day that we have to ourselves. We're chattering all the time. 95% of those are the same we had yesterday, and 80% are negative. So we're basically pre-programmed to kind of repeat yesterday. So by doing things like listening to music, we can actually be telling ourselves a different narrative. As crazy as that sounds, if you're only ever listening to depressing songs, think about it. You're saying those same sad things over and over again. Your mind and body doesn't know that that's not actually happening to you. They believe that whatever Taylor Swift's angst is for that day, because I know that's what you'd be listening to, Dan, that that's how you're feeling. We can switch that around and put on something happier, and your mind goes, yay, and you smile and you feel better. So there's just some really simple things that you can do to kind of flip yourself into a different focus mode, a different productive mode, or just from feeling a bit low to feeling a wee bit better. And that's all you're ever trying to do, is just kind of move that needle ever so slightly.
I think taking that moment away from staring at a task and the negative thoughts that people have. We all have the skills in ourselves to kind of get through most of the things that we work on. And we're talking about have people having a better lifestyle. What does a better lifestyle mean to you? And how do we overcome the hurdles that you are facing? Today, people's focus is when I take a moment away, it's what's happening on Instagram, right? Which isn't a moment away. It's just a redirecting onto a different distraction.
It uses the same part of your brain as work does. So you're not actually taking a break. That's why most people are burnt out and overstimulated, because we're not giving our brains a break from screens. So yeah, that's like the last thing that you should do when you take a break is pick up your phone.
And
it's like, hard. It's hard to break the habit. It's addictive for a reason. that is actually a really interesting and scary thing at the same time. When you look at your phone usage and you see how much time you spend on different applications, and people will say, to your point around the Elon Musk's, like, how many hours can people spend on something? We all have the same hours in the day. Oh no, they must have a magical bucket of hours somewhere because they get so much done. I think you find they probably don't spend 3 hours a day on Facebook. Mm-hmm. That is amazing how those breaks that we take actually add up into things that, let's face it, are not bringing value to our day, our experience. We think they are, but they're really not. And so if there's a way that we can help people introduce more positive practices, go for a quick walk. Don't take your phone with you. It's really powerful. Look around you, pick a color when you go for a walk and see how many times you see that color. It's all just getting your brain to be curious about other things, to recognize your surroundings around you. And you'll be amazed what you see when you kind of go out with that mindset. If you then bring that into your desk and your job, then it's almost like you've taken off the blinkers and you've gone widescreen.
Mm-hmm.
So these are just some of the little tips and things that I do. And it's amazing what you see in your local neighborhood when you just choose to open your eyes and be more curious.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something to do with pro athletes. It's something very similar. Mm-hmm. Whereas instead of asking a pro athlete after, let's say a game of football, it could be American or the rest of the world, whichever. Instead of asking someone to look back and ask them how it went, asking beforehand specific things to look out for. When does your heart start racing? When do you start feeling stress? Notice those points and then think about what created it. And then what people noticed was the athletes would come back to them and say, I noticed my heart racing at X point. I noticed I felt stress or nerves at this point. And they would discuss it. If they afterwards and said, did you feel any stress? No. Do you feel nervous? No. Mm-hmm. And just the concept. So when you're talking about going for a walk and looking for a specific color that's blue, looking for that color, you're going to notice it. If you get back from that walk and say, how many times do you see blue? Did I see blue? Okay. Your brain won't remember because you're not looking out for it. It's just a really, really interesting observation.
So that is the thing with pro athletes. That's really interesting. Yeah. I know that there's Dan Carter, who's a Kiwi All Black rugby player. He talks about how he would whack himself in the leg during a game before he had to score a conversion, because it basically was a way to get his mind focused on the present. And he'd like feel his toes and his boots. So he's like, I'm on the grass, I'm here. And it was a way for him to block out the crowd and everything else around him, because he knew the importance of being in the moment and not distracted mm-hmm. when he kicked that ball. So what we're describing is that practice of kind of being really present. Because mm-hmm. when you're really present, you notice the color blue, you can feel when your heart rate is racing, you know what might have triggered you to react in a certain way. And it's so powerful when you bring that into the workplace, because what we really encourage people to do is to think about that around communication. So notice, what were the thoughts that you had? What's the type of language that you're using? What's the words? Are you saying can't, won't, but all the time? How can you flip that into something more positive? So that as a leader, sometimes you have to deliver bad news. How can you change what the person's going to hear by the language that they use, that you can still get your point across, but it's going to be received better, and therefore you will have a better conversation mm-hmm. and outcome. And when I started to really kind of check in with that around noticing language, I really noticed how people responded to me differently, and you just mm-hmm. have improved communication. It just happens naturally, and it'll probably take a few months before you go, oh, hang on a minute, that was a bit easier. Oh, it's because I'm listening and I'm aware and I'm being present. And that's what happens when you're checking in for those things. Yeah. You're looking for it in advance. And I'm going to come back to that kind of psychological safety thing, that you've got that little bit of space and awareness that a company that is going to support you allows you to have, because you've been able to do all the other things that allow you to feel more supported.
Mm-hmm. I remember I was working in a store and people would use the term I a lot when they're talking about others. Like, I gave you a better price, let me go check. And they're going to go and ask someone else. So I noticed early in my career, I'd used the term I, me, my. And I had to reprogram that to we, us, and talking about the team. And when I reprogrammed how I said it, and it definitely takes time to change it, I stopped looking at it as in what, how does the outlook look from me to how does the outlook look from us? Especially founding a company, you're doing it by yourself at first, but I would say we and us so much that people would be like, who's we? At the time it was just me, maybe me and my dog, but it would be we. And I found that I stopped looking at how, if something went right, what did we do right? What did I do right was what did we do right? And it just a slight change of perspective, but actually created something where I was looking at the wider team's success, the wider team's failures, because you're going to have those, or learning experiences, however we want to phrase it. We're doing this as a team. We're working together, and it actually creates that feeling that we are actually a team working together. And it's less of a, from a hierarchy point of view. And it was more about us. It actually made a big difference for myself, specifically how I looked at an outlook when it was described as a we rather than a me.
It's something around like accountability and responsibility in that, but also makes you feel more supported, even though, as you say, it may be you or just one other person at that time. It makes it feel like it's a collective effort, which can feel really, really important to really echo that team. Because what I found is that language, as I said, really matters in a workplace. A company mission mm-hmm. really matters, those company values and culture. And we've worked places where the culture is smash it, crush it, kill it, don't take a day's holiday, which creates a certain type of working environment. I've also worked somewhere where their company motto was more fun, less fear. I'm sure it was really well intentioned, but why is there any fear in the workplace? And why is the word fear the first thing I see when I walk into the workplace? And what's more fun? More fun than what? It's so subjective. It was actually really negative. And of course, created an environment that was really, really fearful. So it's important for us to really be honest about the language that we use with ourselves, but also the impact that it can have on culture and how that then translates into how people feel they can show up in, at work, and how they're going to be received and rewarded.
Yeah, you've touched on loads of like great points to really think through. And one that I should have mentioned a minute ago, but when you were talking about the rugby player and the conversion, and so just for Americans, think about American football and field goal, and where he's, you know, hitting his own leg to get himself in that mental zone to know what his task is, to kick that ball. And someone once said to me, if I put a piece of wood on the floor right now, 2x4, lay it flat, could you walk along it? Yes. If I put that on 15-foot ladders that was all steady, could you walk along it? You'd be nervous. You're more likely to make that mistake. And so pro athletes feel pressure. We all feel pressure. But when you're talking about pro athletes, one of the, you know, greatest rugby players is feeling that level of pressure, and he's visualizing it and creating that. What happens in the workplace? It's a really interesting thing that pressure doesn't improve performance, right? The same as fire drills, which I've heard that term for the first time in the US so often at previous companies, to the point when if one person emailed me with a fire drill, I would wait 2 hours, because I guarantee within 2 hours, it wasn't anything that we need to work on anymore.
So the whole thing of crying wolf if everything's marked urgent.
Exactly. But the thing was, is it was this concept where if I kick up a big stink, because I'm in a, not me, this person's in a senior position, kick up a big stink and make it pressure, I'm going to get an outcome. No, what you're going to do is get people at 8 a.m. stressed, and you've stressed them out for the rest of their day. You're taking their productive hours on something they probably don't need to. You're creating pressure.
You also won't get a thoughtful answer. You'll get an answer, but you won't get potentially the most thoughtful one.
You won't. Like, there are times when things are going to be more urgent, but creating fire drills and creating pressure and stress doesn't help. And when you're talking about a pro athlete who has to visualize it, because they're getting the crowd, you've got your supporters cheering you on, expecting you're going to make this kick. You've got the opposing fans who are booing you, jeering you, and hoping you miss and trying to put you off. You have both ends of the spectrum. This could be a game-winning kick. You've got to get rid of all of that. It makes no difference. This kick is exactly the same as the 1,000 that you did in practice this week and the 1,000 you did the week before and the 1,000 you did the week before. We don't work as well under pressure and under extreme pressure. Little nudges, fine, but under extreme pressure, we don't perform as well. And so understanding that, and understanding that we shouldn't be trying to put pressure on people, we should be trying to relieve that pressure and make sure any of the extreme pressure we're removing and making sure things are going in that direction. As a team, when things are urgent, as a team, maybe we're going to have to come together and work on something. But we're all going to take part of that and not create one level of stress for one person. Those things around fire drills, team no sleep, all that type of stuff, that is the worst environment, because you're not seen as someone who's doing a great job because you're working hard. The final thing on that, which is really interesting, was a different philosophy on leadership. When you're talking about growth and leadership, it shouldn't be about adding extreme pressure on people. It should be about giving people a better work-life balance. It should be about giving people the ability of doing their job successfully and feeling like they're doing their job well. When we talk about burnouts, we talk about stress in the workplace and how it looks. It's really about, what goals do you have as an individual? What boundaries do you want to set as an individual? It can be out of work goals, it can be in work goals.
Yeah. And one of the things around goal setting is to really understand why. Why is that important? So that's the next level of question around. Somebody might have a financial goal, or they might have a time-based goal or a title-based role. I think less so these days, but certainly in my old days, very much title-led roles. And what's really important is actually the why behind it. Why do you want to be COO or a CEO? Because arguably, you probably don't. It's maybe a perception of what's behind it, but really kind of challenging. And no one has to share that, but really to kind of think yourself. And it's something that I sit with quite often. So I ask myself, just why? Why is that important? Why do I want that? Why is that something that I want to strive for? Because you might find to unpick something that arguably is more important than what you think the goal is. It could be the lifestyle that you have that gets you to that goal, which might actually be more achievable than you think. So really kind of understanding why and what the levers are important. And just coming back to what you said about stress, is that there is good stress in the world. It's called eustress. And without it, we wouldn't get out of bed in the morning. So our jobs are not to alleviate all of that. We need the heart starter sometimes. We need the adrenaline rush. We need the things to get excited and nervous about. That's what living is. It's not always about being super zen. You kind of need the hit of the other good stuff too. It's just finding that balance where that adrenaline shot doesn't override everything else that you've got going on. So it's a cliche perhaps to end on, but it's the cliche of balance, it's the cliche of boundaries. I challenge people to really ask themselves why, what's important and why is it important? Mm-hmm. And with those things, you're able to kind of let the boundaries and everything else form for you. But having that personal mission, if you like, means that you're able to ask for more from yourself, but also from your workplace, knowing that it's what you actually need.
Love it. I think that's probably the best way of ending. Cool.
Great. Thanks.